This is the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. Happy to be here with you every Monday and Friday from 3 until 6, and always on my website, harrisonline.com. Max is here with me in the studio, and there's the 4 o'clock hour on Friday, so that's when we do our showbiz stuff and review movies for you. There are 6 movies opening this weekend. It's one of the biggest opening weekends of the year in terms of quantity.
But not quality.
Well, we'll get to whether it's got quality or not here in just a moment. Max and I only had time to go see 3 of the movies that are opening this weekend, but we'll tell you what the other 3 are as well, in case you're looking to head to a theater to go to the show this weekend. I'm going to start with a movie that I saw that I know you didn't, Max, which is called Only the Brave.
Josh Brolin.
Yes, Josh Brolin's the star of this movie. When I was a kid, let me start with this little story. When I was a kid, I really looked up to my cousin Mel. Mel, in addition to being a father and husband and plumber, was also a volunteer firefighter. And I was fascinated by the fact, Mel was older than I was, much older. I was fascinated by the fact that whenever the siren went off in his town, he would drop whatever he was doing and race to the firehouse to join his colleagues as they jumped on the truck and headed off to fight a fire. Which to me then and still today, I consider to be one of the most selfless acts a person can do. It takes quite a measure of courage when everybody else is running away from the flames for he and the other firefighters to run towards them in an effort to save life and property. So that fascinated me as a kid, and I still, as an adult, have a tremendous amount of respect for firefighters, whether they are volunteers or professionals. And frankly, I can't understand why there haven't been many good movie dramas about the men and women who do that job. There are TV shows about them, Chicago Fire being one of them.
Chicago Fire's pretty big right now, yeah.
There have been a couple of others that have highlighted the work that they do, but I can only think of 3 movies about firefighters that are worth naming. One of them would be Backdraft.
Backdraft, of course, the granddaddy, I would think.
Ladder 49, which was a Travolta movie, which was okay.
Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah, but not great. And, of course, The Towering Inferno, with Steve McQueen as the battalion chief who goes up there with Paul Newman to try to save this tremendous building that's burning. Okay, by the way, Steve Martin did play a fire chief in the movie Roxanne, but that's a romantic comedy where the firemen only really appear occasionally as comic relief. That's not a movie about firefighters. Now, you combine that with the fact that we've had wildfires in the news the last couple of weeks as Northern California has been devoured by these blazes that destroyed hundreds of acres of homes and forests.
There are people saying that this movie will not do very well in California because, quite frankly, the people there don't want to go buy popcorn and watch things burn.
But it does make it a perfect time to release your movie. It's kind of like when they released the China Syndrome and they had the good fortune, bad fortune of the Three Mile Island incident happening at the same time at a nuclear plant in Pennsylvania. Things that are going on in the news that can boost up your publicity for your movie could be a good thing. So it would seem like a perfect time to release this movie, Only the Brave, which is based on the true story of the Granite Mountain Hotshots, who were an elite group based in Prescott, Arizona, that specialized in fighting wildfires just like the ones you see on your TV screen every day. And as you mentioned, it stars Josh Brolin. He's the supervisor of the Hotshots, and his boss is Jeff Bridges, who still is sticking out his lower jaw and mumbling, which he's been doing since the movie Crazy Heart, and which drives me crazy in every role he does.
But you won an Oscar for that, so he's going to keep on doing it.
Was it. Which came first, Crazy Heart or True Grit?
Which came first? I think True Grit came first, because he won for Crazy Heart.
Because it was True Grit where he started doing that, the jaw forward and kind of mumbling like he's got a mouth full of tobacco the whole time. And he does that in this movie, too. Just, I hate it. And he's a good actor. Miles Teller is also in there as the rookie on the squad who Josh Brolin kind of takes under his wing. And we see the firefighters bonding with each other as they go through their drills and working real fires. And these guys, by the way, do their jobs without hoses. They're not the ones who are coming along in the plane and dropping the water down on the wildfires. They're not the ones out there with the long hoses who are trying to spray water to stop the fire. These guys, these hotshots, as they're known, they use axes and shovels and chainsaws and essentially clear away trees and brush and anything else that could be fuel in the path of these rapidly moving wildfires. Those scenes are somewhat exciting. But the director of this movie, Joseph Kosinski, and the screenwriters, Ken Nolan and Eric Warren, they weren't content to just focus on these men and their profession. In Only the Brave, we also get wrapped up in this side story of James Brolin's wife, who's played by the terrific Jennifer Connelly. Ever since I saw her in A Beautiful Mind, she's good in every role she takes, and she doesn't take that many roles. And she's fine in this, but her character wants more out of their marriage and doesn't like the fact that Josh Brolin's away for so long, off fighting these fires, and she's training horses, and we have to see her working that. There's also another subplot involving Miles Teller's girlfriend who is pregnant with his child but doesn't want him around anymore. And you know, if you've ever seen any movie, how that's going to resolve itself. He's going to make his way back into her heart.
So it doesn't sound like you really care about the characters in this movie. You're more annoyed by them.
Well, I'm annoyed by the ones who are given a bad subplot.
Mm.
They're an unnecessary distraction. And frankly, they are one of the reasons that I didn't like the movie. I think one of the reasons they're given more than their share of screen time is that too much of the movie involves Brolin and his men just banging away at the earth rather than confronting the fires directly. So that's where Only the Brave lost me. There's not enough firefighting to keep me riveted to the screen.
It's a strange movie for Kosinski to direct because if I'm remembering correctly, he directed Tron Legacy, and then he followed that up with another science fiction movie called Oblivion with Tom Cruise.
Hmm.
I mean, big actors, big franchises, mm-hmm. but from going from a couple science fiction films to a true life based firefighting drama seems very strange.
Yeah, I will tell you that even in its harrowing climactic scene, which I will not give away. That didn't flip the ratio to action over drama, or really courageous action over soap opera that we get bogged down in here. And it's a shame because there's no doubt that these guys, the Granite Mountain Hotshots and other firefighters like them, they deserve not only our respect and gratitude, but they deserve a good movie made about them. Here's how I can recap my thoughts on this movie. I expected a raging wildfire. I got a slow burn. And that's not good. I'm giving it a 5 out of 10.
Oh, wow.
Only the Brave. It's a shame because, like I said, I have so much respect for the men and women who do that job. I would like to see a better movie made about them. All right, now let's move on to a movie both you and I saw, which is Goodbye, Christopher Robin.
Yeah, Goodbye, Christopher Robin is based on the true story of the creation of Winnie the Pooh by British author A.A. Milne. All I knew about this story going in is what I had heard over the years about how his son, who was a real boy named Christopher Robin, disliked the attention that brought him. And I equated it to where if J.K. Rowling had a son that she named Harry Potter and then wrote the stories about him, people would have gone nuts about that. And this is what happened back then. But that's all I knew. And I didn't even know how much angst they would get into with the movie.
All right, let me just interrupt you to ask you this. Are you a Winnie the Pooh fan?
No, not in any great respect. I mean, I grew up with Winnie the Pooh like a lot of different generations did. I mean, obviously the books have been around forever, and I remember the classic Pooh cartoons that Disney released, and so I watched a fair amount of those when I was a kid, but it didn't carry over into my adult life, and I'm not sure we have any Pooh books around the house for young Oscar. I'm not sure that we've continued the
Don't bother.
Winnie the Pooh.
Don't bother. I'm the one. I'm the one who will say they're not that good.
You never liked them, huh?
Well, I didn't grow up with them.
Sure.
I do remember the Disney movies.
Yes.
With Sterling Holloway being the voice of Pooh.
Absolutely.
Those were cute and clever mm-hmm. and roly-poly and all that sort of stuff.
It was a Saturday morning cartoon for a while. That was fine.
But the actual book, when my daughter was very young, we mm-hmm. got one, and mm-hmm. I read it to her. And as I'm reading it to her, I'm thinking, this is not actually that interesting.
Mm.
And rather than hearing about an English boy and his stuffed animals come to life, she wanted to make up her own stories.
Sure.
Which, by the way, is kind of what this movie's about, because that's how A.A. Milne came to the Winnie the Pooh stories. He took his son into the woods, and they had adventures and made up stories while he was carrying his stuffed animals with him.
Yeah, A.A. Milne came back from the Great War with some
World
manner.
War One.
Which they called the Great War at the time because they didn't know there was going to be another war.
They actually called it the War to End All Wars.
Right, exactly, yeah. And so he came back with some level of PTSD, which, of course, at the time, they didn't know what that was. He was just shell-shocked. And he was a pretty well-respected writer among his peers, but had never written anything really huge, and everybody wanted him to keep on writing, and he was experiencing some manner of writer's block. And this frustrated not only his friends and, of course, himself, but also his wife, who is played here by Margot Robbie.
Who couldn't stand his PTSD. You know, they'd be out somewhere and a balloon would pop and he would freak out.
And it was getting in the way of her lifestyle.
Right. Or, you know, a light would flash or there'd be some loud disturbance and he'd be having flashbacks to being on the front lines of the war.
But again, this wasn't understood then, and people just wanted him to snap out of it.
Yeah.
But he couldn't snap out of it. He couldn't write. And they had, first of all, everybody calls him Blue. And I thought that was interesting because I don't remember them explaining why his nickname was Blue.
I agree.
They also called their son Billy. That was his nickname.
Apparently, in 1930s England,
sure,
you didn't call anybody by their given name.
Exactly. And so even though his real
unless they
name,
were a girl. Because so Daphne, the wife, is called Daphne.
You're right. Even though his name is Christopher Robin, the whole family, including the governess, played by Kelly MacDonald from Trainspotting, she's great in this, refers to him as Billy and not his real name, Christopher Robin. So the PTSD that Milne is suffering from or dealing with frustrates everybody around him, including his wife. And Margot Robbie says, you know what, either write something or I'm out of here. As a matter of fact, I'm out of here. I'll come back when you write something. Snap out of it. And she leaves. So he is left with the governess and his young son, who, quite frankly, he doesn't know how to relate to. He is not very warm towards the child. You get the idea. He loves his son.
That is the understatement of the day.
Yes, yes.
These parents are not suited to be parents. First of all, they're an upper crust British snooty couple who are, I don't know, were they called socialites in that time?
I think so.
Okay, that's who
they are. Known for being known.
And all she wants to know is what's going on outside, what's the new fashion, I want to go out in my rich car with my driver and go to some party where we all stand around and go, oh, ha, 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 ha.
And she wants to write a new bestseller so they can afford to do those things.
Yes.
And
I hated these people.
You know what? You don't warm to anybody except Christopher Robin and possibly Kelly MacDonald's nanny.
Correct.
As well, who obviously cares for the young boy.
Yes.
So as Milne tries to get a bit more of a decent relationship with his son, he notices that his son is always carrying around an Edward bear, because that's what they were called back then, and a stuffed animal donkey and a tiger, and they go into the woods, as you say. They start having some adventures, and Milne decides to write some stories about this imaginative time.
Now, we should say that he's forced to spend time with his son, not only has his wife left, but Olive, the nanny, she has to go off and take care of her ailing mother. And so that's when he's left alone in the house. There's no
he
one.
He doesn't know what to do.
He doesn't know how to cook. He doesn't know how to take care of a kid. What does a kid eat, wear, do, all that sort of stuff. He's been disconnected from this kid who, at that age, is what, 5, 6?
I'd say about 6 or 7, and it's almost like he's meeting him for the first time.
Okay, you have a son exactly that age.
I do.
Can you imagine being thrown into this situation where you've lived with this thing in your house, but had no bond with it whatsoever?
No. It's quite harsh the way that they don't shy away from the lack of connection here. And it also makes the creation of Winnie the Pooh and those stories a little less saccharine and pleasant than I thought they were going to be, because it is almost like he finds that his son has this imagination and is making up the stories, and he basically takes them. I mean, it's like the only connection he has with his son, and he ruthlessly takes them, writes these stories, which become ginormous bestsellers.
Worldwide sensation.
And all of a sudden, of course, the press comes calling, and they want to meet the quote-unquote real Christopher Robin, who must have the best home life ever. With his mommy and daddy, and of course Margot Robbie comes back, and they're like, yes, we have the greatest family ever. And young Christopher Robin is kind of stuck going, I don't know if that's true.
Yeah, and meanwhile he's being used as a marketing tool. He's got to pose for pictures. He's got to go to other people's parties. He's got to be this character that he's not. He wants to be the little boy that he is, but he's forced to be this Christopher Robin character.
And I finally realized, watching the movie, why the stories I heard were true. Because I always thought, well, why did he have such a big problem that his dad named a story ad for him? I always thought if I wrote a children's book and I had a little boy in the story, I would name him Oscar. Like, why not? But now watching the movie, I realize all of the behind the scenes stuff that nobody knew, you know, until years later, of how he was treated and how these stories came about.
And how he resented the fame. And hated it even more as he grew older.
He didn't ask for it. I mean, because Winnie the Pooh was not supposed to be everybody's toy. It was his toy, and he felt like it was all taken from him.
Yep. I will say that the best part of this is the actor who plays the kid. His name's Alex Lawther.
Alex, okay, I was trying to find his name, because there's three different people who play Christopher Robin, depending on age.
No, the little kid with the bowl haircut and the dimples.
I completely agree. It's the best child performance I've seen in a movie since the young woman in BFG from Steven Spielberg. I thought she was phenomenal in that, too. And we don't get a lot of great performances by children, and he's phenomenal in this movie.
Yeah,
he really makes the whole audience care for him more than his parents.
He sets the right tone with every line he says. Now, what did you think of Domhnall Gleeson, who plays A.A. Milne, and Margot Robbie, who plays Daphne?
Yeah, I thought Margot Robbie was great. It's nice to see her expand her repertoire from what she's done in movies like Focus, or even the more over-the-top movies like Suicide Squad. I thought she was very good in this, and I hear that in her next film, which we'll see later on this year, called I, Tanya, where she plays Tanya Harding, mm-hmm. she's supposed to be even better in that film. So I liked her a lot in this, even though her character was quite unpleasant.
Yeah.
Domhnall Gleeson, I first noticed him in Brooklyn, where he co-starred with Saoirse Ronan. I thought he was great in that.
Didn't you see About Time?
I've never seen About Time.
Oh, that's a good one.
I have a digital copy of it. I should probably watch it.
That's a good one.
It's sad, right?
It's a British romantic comedy / drama with
Rachel McAdams
and Bill Nye as his father. And the thing about that movie is Bill Nye, the father, finally tells Domhnall Gleeson, now that he's grown up, that there's a secret in the family, that the men in the family can travel backwards and forwards in time. And how does that affect your relationships, not only with your son or your father, but also with the women in your life? Mm. It's very, very clever.
I'll have to watch it. The audience will probably know him from the recent Star Wars films. He is the villain General Hux in Force Awakens and the upcoming Last Jedi.
He was also in the Harry Potter movies.
Domhnall Gleeson?
Yeah.
No, I don't believe so. I think Brendan Gleeson was Mad-Eye Moody in the Harry Potter film.
Okay, I didn't say he was Mad-Eye Moody, but I'll look it up.
Okay.
I'll look it up. I just wanted to say this. I like Margot Robbie a lot. She's been good in bad movies, but in this one, I think she chews the scenery a little bit too much. Or do you think that that's just how this character Daphne was written?
Well, at first, I had a big problem with the character of Daphne, because I thought, oh, great, it's another genius who has a put-upon wife. You know, it's somebody who left to their own devices would be this amazing genius, but no, they have the shrew around them. But then I realized he's very unlikable, too. So I think that maybe the character was just written as very amplified. You know, mm-hmm. I and it's an interesting contrast, because you ask how you know what I thought of Domhnall Gleeson. He's so ultra reserved in this.
Stiff.
It's almost like he's afraid to take a breath in almost every scene. And you see this repression. You don't really know where that even comes from, because that's not from the war. He's just a very repressed
person.
That's
that British upper crust snootiness I was talking about
completely,
before.
I mean, it just completely changes his whole life.
I think that Kelly MacDonald, who you mentioned as Olive, the nanny, and the little boy, Alex Lawther, are the two best parts of this movie. And by the way, Domhnall Gleeson was Bill Weasley in the Harry Potter movies.
No way. He was Bill Weasley.
And he was also in Ex Machina with Alicia Vikander.
That's right. He was the he's the guy who goes to meet
Oscar House of Sex Toys.
So I have seen him before. I didn't realize that was him in Ex Machina. And Bill Weasley, look at that. You have schooled me on Harry Potter, sir.
All right. That's all I know about it. I look at it on IMDb and I find it. I do want to say this. And again, we're not going to spoil anything here, but I don't like what happens in the last act of the movie, because I think the directors and the screenwriters are manipulating us as the viewers a little bit too much. And I really can't say more than that. And that whole entitled nature of the British upper class turns me off. And I also want to say this movie, Goodbye, Christopher Robin, If you are a family of Winnie the Pooh lovers, and you've read these stories to your kids, and you think, oh, Goodbye Christopher Robin, and you see it's rated PG, you think, I'm going to take my kids to see this one. I think that your kids may have a little problem with the recurring war themes and the indifference to the boys' issues. This is not a family outing movie.
I would say two things for people who are curious about Goodbye Christopher Robin. Number one, it is not a making of story about Winnie the Pooh. You get very little insight into why Milne made the characters who they are. At one point when his son has the donkey, he goes, what should we call the donkey? And Milne goes, Eeyore, done. That's it.
Yeah.
So if you're a huge fan, don't go expecting to see the nuts and bolts. Number two, if you love these books, if you love them more than Paul and I do, because Paul and I are sort of indifferent, don't go see this movie. I think if you're the biggest Winnie the Pooh fan, you shouldn't go.
Right.
Because this might color the way you look at those books.
I agree. And this is not like Saving Mr. Banks as the origin story of Mary Poppins, the movie. We know that it was a book first, and that movie is about turning it into a Walt Disney musical. That's fine. And Tom Hanks was good in that, and Emma Thompson was very good in that. All the supporting cast, very good in that. I didn't love the movie, but everybody in it was good. But this one, some of the performances kind of don't work, and the whole feeling of the movie is a little bit depressing.
It's definitely a depressing movie. The main flaw that I had with it is I felt the pace was far too slow. And I understand it took its time getting anywhere. And I thought, boy, let's pick up the pace a little bit. And you're right. There's no kind of, I think they do in the last act. I know what you're talking about. They try to send the audience out with a different feeling. And I don't think that works.
No.
Because they haven't earned it. But overall, I did like the movie because it filled me in on a lot of history that I just wasn't aware of. It doesn't make me want to go read a Winnie the Pooh book, though.
No, you're not going to buy one for Oscar, are you?
Right, exactly. No, of course not.
All right, we'll take a break. We've got more showbiz stuff coming up here, including more movies that are opening this weekend here on the Big 550 KTRS. Friday afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS, Paul Harris doing the showbiz stuff with Max this hour. We've already given Only the Brave a 5 out of 10. And we reviewed Goodbye Christopher Robin. We did not rate it on a scale of 10. Neither of us seemed to have liked it very much. What do you think?
I'm going to give Goodbye Christopher Robin, shockingly, a 7.
What?
Yeah. I liked it a bit more than you did. I mean, it's slow and it's melancholy and it'll make you hate Winnie the Pooh. But I liked Donald Gleason and the little kid, and I liked Margot Robbie.
Uh-huh.
And it filled me in again on a story I was not familiar with.
Yeah, I was disappointed in it. Maybe I expected more. But, you know, when I go to see these movies, I know just one plot line. I don't watch the trailer. I don't know anything else. But I knew Goodbye Christopher Robin. Okay, that's going to be Winnie the Pooh related. And maybe I was expecting more, although why would I, since I didn't really like Winnie the Pooh? I'm giving this thing a 4 out of 10.
Whoa, worse than Only the Brave.
Yes.
Wow.
Because Only the Brave has some redemptive qualities to it that this movie lacks.
I'm surprised.
Yeah.
Wow.
Let's talk about other movies that are opening this weekend. One that you were going to see but didn't get a chance to go to the screening of,
right,
called The Snowman, which is executive produced by Martin Scorsese, I know, and it stars Michael Fassbender and Rebecca Ferguson, and it's what, a serial killer movie?
Yeah, it's it's another serial killer where an investigator is getting notes from the killer who's preying on lots of women, and it just looked like another, hey, I'm going to hack up women and you have to find me. And I did watch the trailer for this, and I'm a little tired of these types of movies where lots of women being killed by a serial killer. They're not enjoyable for me, you know, unless you have a nice twist like a Clarice Starling being involved with Silence of the Lambs or something like an Eyewitness with Sigourney Weaver. Mm-hmm. But I don't like seeing the two guys going at each other with women as cannon fodder.
Have there been movies about female serial killers besides Monster with Charlize Theron as Aileen Wuornos?
And Aileen Wuornos is probably the most famous female serial killer, one of the only ones, because there just aren't a lot of them. I mean, I guess you had Black Widow back in the day. That's a pretty good movie.
Okay.
Deborah Winger was in that.
Right. Oh, yeah. I remember that one. Yeah.
That was pretty good. I think David Mamet might have helped out on that script.
Well, the snowman is being killed by critics.
I know. I was upset about missing it because I like Fassbender a whole lot. But I have been struck by all the reviews first coming out from the UK and then here in the States where people are calling it one of the worst movies of the year. The director even said, in defense almost, listen, 15% of this script wasn't able to be shot.
What?
So when they say that it's produced by Scorsese, did he yank the funding? I'm not sure how this possible. 15% of the movie wasn't even shot. So apparently you just jump from time to time. And you don't, like, you're missing giant parts
characters
of the movie.
Appear and you don't know anything about their backstory.
Some of the critics said that explains a lot.
Wow.
Now, I do know that Fassbender is playing a detective whose name is Harry Hole.
I beg your pardon?
Well, that's the name of the detective he's playing. I don't think it's played for laughs either. So we missed the snowman.
You sure this isn't a Seth MacFarlane movie? That's the kind of creativity you get out of Seth MacFarlane.
Maybe it should have been.
Wow. So the snowman we haven't seen, but the other people who have seen it absolutely hated it. Then there's also Geostorm.
Yes.
Which looks like another one of these 2012 movies with climate change affecting us and killing the world.
It looks even more like a sci-fi type of movie, and by that I mean the television network, SYFY, like Sharknado.
Geostorm, wow.
Yeah, the trailer really doesn't look even as polished as something like San Andreas with The Rock. I mean, that was a pretty big hit, and people liked that movie. Paul Giamatti was there. Where this one looks much more like something you would see on television late at night at 3 o'clock in the morning. Gerard Butler, who has just made a career out of playing these lunkhead saviors of humanity and things like Olympus Has Fallen, mm-hmm. and London has Fallen. I mean, this one is something called Geostorm, where there are these satellites that protect us, you see, Paul, from weather getting out of hand. But the satellites...
Well, there aren't.
I know that. But the satellites go crazy and start attacking Earth instead. So, oh no, what are we going to do to dismantle this? If only we could hit Control-Alt-Delete and dismantle these satellites.
Oh, wow.
So that's Geostorm.
Okay.
Yeah.
My wife, who read the Snowman book or books, said it's pronounced Harry Holy.
I'm sure it is.
Or Hole, something like that. She also says it's Swedish or Norwegian or something
maybe
like that.
Maybe for the American market, you just change the name.
Yeah.
Maybe you just change the name.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm with you. It's like that place in Thailand, Phuket. Not going to say it.
Nope.
Also opening this weekend, Tyler Perry's Boo 2.
Yeah, Boo Madea 2, yeah. I've not seen the Madea films. I know that'll come as a shock.
Here's everything Max and I can say about this movie. And this completes everything Max and I can say about this movie.
It will be number one over the weekend, though, because The Snowman is getting bad reviews. Nobody cares about Geostorm. I don't think enough people will go out to see an art house movie like Goodbye, Christopher Robin. And, of course, we are going to talk about Mark Felt in a moment. And that does have Liam Neeson. But I imagine Boo Madea 2 will be number one. People love those movies.
I said there were six movies this weekend. There are actually seven. What is Breathe?
Breathe is a movie with Claire Foy and Andrew Garfield, who was actually a guest today on the McGraw-Milhaven show at 10 after 9. I was quite envious of
okay.
that. And I'm not sure what it's about. It's one of those, you know, art housey type of movies. I don't think it's here in St. Louis yet. I think it's coming out in a couple weeks.
Oh, all right. Well, let me talk about Mark Felt, which is the other movie that I saw that's opening today. The full title is Mark Felt, The Man Who Brought Down the White House.
Why isn't the title a reference to his moniker?
Deep Throat?
Wouldn't you think that would get people in the theaters?
I think if you put Deep Throat in the name of a movie, people think it's porn.
Ah.
Which it was. Mark Felt, this movie is a drama about the man who, while second in command at the FBI in 1972 and 1973, simultaneously served as Deep Throat, the anonymous source to Bob Woodward of the Washington Post, on the Watergate scandals that led to President Nixon's resignation. The fact that he did that anonymously, Woodward knew who he was, but swore he would never tell who it was unless Mark Felt revealed himself or Felt died. Mm. And I guess Carl Bernstein and Ben Bradley were the only other two people who knew the identity of Deep Throat. Mark Felt died in 2008, but in 2005, he actually outed himself in a story in Vanity Fair. He was long gone from the FBI at that point, and I guess he wanted the world to know that he was the one who was, quote, the man who brought down the White House. In this movie, Liam Neeson plays the white-haired Mark Felt, and I will tell you, Liam Neeson is very good. Very good in this role. I've liked him in several other movies, even movies that other people have made fun of, like the Taken series. I thought this guy's a good actor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you don't he's believe me, go back and watch Schindler's List one more time.
Mm-hmm.
He's magnificent as Oscar Schindler in that movie. So in this movie, he plays Mark Felt, who was sickened by Richard Nixon replacing the late J. Edgar Hoover as FBI director with a guy named L. Patrick Gray, who was an outsider, who was not part of the FBI culture. And Felt thought that this guy was more like a mole who was feeding information back to the White House about the Watergate investigation. And so that's really what the movie's about. You got a supporting cast here of white guys playing FBI guys, but they're good actors. Brian D'Arcy James, who I've seen on Broadway in Something Rotten, and was also terrific in Spotlight with Michael Keaton and all the rest. Josh Lucas, Tony Goldwyn, Ike Barinholtz, even if you don't know their names, as soon as you see them on screen, you go, oh yeah, that guy. I know who that is. They play Mark Felt's underlings. But the problem is they all look so similar because of the way the movie's shot. You know, they're wearing white shirts and black ties and drab FBI two-piece suits. It's really hard to tell who each character is, and actually, most of the time, it doesn't matter. And here's the great irony of this movie. It stars Liam Neeson, and there's a missing child subplot.
Wait a minute.
That they didn't make up. Mark Felt's teenage daughter had left home for parts unknown. And that part of the mystery plays out in this movie in scenes with Liam Neeson as Mark Felt at home with Diane Lane, who is very good as Audrey Felt, his wife. She's a tortured woman who drank too much. And I have loved Diane Lane since I saw her as a 13-year-old actress in A Little Romance. Unfortunately, in this movie, we don't get enough of Diane Lane. She's a pleasure to see on the screen. She's a good actress. But I know why she's not in there. You talked about in Snowman, they left out 15% of the script. They didn't even shoot it.
Sure.
In this one, Peter Landisman, the director, overshot so much that he had to cut out a lot of stuff. And a lot of that stuff was Diane Lane's scenes.
Wow.
He's actually sent her a public apology for a lot of her stuff ending up on the cutting room floor, although there is no such thing anymore. It just goes into the cloud instead of up onto the screen. Speaking of this guy, Peter Landisman, who directed this, he also made a movie I loved from 2015. It was one of my top 10 or 12 movies of the year called Concussion with Will Smith as Dr. Bennett Omalu, the guy who discovered CTE.
CTE, yeah.
Yeah. The head injuries that come from concussions. So he made a very good movie there, which was mostly a talking movie. But this time he stuck with an even more talky story that makes for a less than compelling movie. In this movie, you see Felt talking with his FBI colleagues as they stand around a desk or they're moving between offices.
Is it tough to get any kind of sense of intrigue because you already know what's going to happen?
That's a big part of it.
I mean, there's never any doubt that he's going to be successful.
Right. Even when he slips out to undisclosed locations, you know he's not going to be found out.
Right.
Oh, he's on the payphone in the rain outside of that laundromat. No one's going to know that because it was a secret for over 30 years.
We all know that it was a secret.
So you're right. We know how it ends. Now, I think that the makers of Mark Felt, the movie, wanted it to be a sequel of sorts to All the President's Men. Although not really a sequel because it takes place at the same time. Kind of a
companion piece.
Thank you. That's a very, very good phrase. Unfortunately, that classic movie, All the President's Men, covered a lot more than just the deep throat angle. And it did it in a way that this one just can't. And it was a brilliant movie, one of the greatest ever. And it relegates this movie to not much more than a footnote, which, by the way, Mark Felt is, too. So he calls himself Mark Felt, the man who brought down the White House, and that's the name of the movie. But I'm giving it a 4 out of 10.
Oof.
Mostly for the performances of Liam Neeson and Diane Lane, who are both very, very good in the movie.
Okay, so Mark Felt and Goodbye Christopher Robin both got 4s.
Yes.
If you had to watch one of them again, which one would you watch?
Only the Brave.
There you go. There's the right answer.
Which is not a great movie, but it's a little bit better than those.